Welcome to Everything Co-op, bringing you information on how cooperatives can help improve your quality of life. This show is being sponsored by the National Co-op Bank, NCB. The NCB is dedicated to strengthening communities nationwide for the delivery of banking and financial services for the nation's cooperatives, their members, and other socially responsible organizations. For more information on the power of community ownership, visit ncb.coop. That's ncb.coop. Now stay tuned for your host, Vernon Oakes.
Good morning, everybody. This is Vernon Oakes. Welcome to Everything Cooperative. This morning, we are in Birmingham, Alabama, celebrating the Federation A Southern Cooperative 51st Annual Meeting. And in the studio, if you will, right here with me, is Cornelius Blanding, who is the Executive Director of the Federation. Good morning, Cornelius.
Good morning, Vernon.
And how are you today?
Better than I deserve.
So first, for people that don't know about the Federation of Southern Co-ops, what is the Federation of Southern Co-ops?
The Federation is a nonprofit cooperative association of black farmers, landowners, and cooperatives all around the South. The Federation was founded out of the Civil Rights Movement back in 1967, so we're a 51-year-old organization that primarily works around three themes, if you will: cooperative economic development, land retention, and advocacy. So really working in rural communities and rural black communities, but in all communities, domestically and globally, trying to connect people, trying to connect farmers, trying to connect communities to have control and have sustainable communities.
So that's cooperative economic development, mm-hmm. economic development, land retention, and advocacy.
Yes, sir.
Advocacy means working
with communities, working with legislators, working to have better programs and policies that impact the people, the communities where we work.
Okay, that sounds like I was just at a meeting with Reverend Barber on this Poor People's Campaign, and it seemed like advocacy is what he talks a lot about mm-hmm. in trying to get policy for poor folk.
And that's extremely important because, what I like to say is that policy, it either promotes poverty or it plays a role in addressing it. And when it's left unchecked, typically it promotes poverty. And so people understanding legislation, understanding policy, understanding the impact that it has on their lives is important. And it's even more important that they play a role in it.
So how many states does the Federation represent?
We're chartered to work in 13 states, including D.C. The Federation was actually chartered in D.C. back in 1967 because we couldn't get chartered at home in the South. And it still is almost impossible to get for an organization like the Federation to be chartered now. But we work in 13 states. We're chartered to work in 13 states. But we have representation. By representation, I mean board representation, network, and a membership in about 9 of those states. But we truly dig in and focus on about 6 of them. And I say that because that's where we have staff, a board member, and our strong network of partners. And so that's where the bulk of our work really happens.
And what are those 6 states?
Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, did I say Florida?
No.
Louisiana, and Texas.
Okay, that's 7.
That's that, well, and 7. Then.
Okay.
And so we've been growing.
Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, Louisiana, Texas, and there's one more.
Did I say Florida? Did we get Florida?
Yeah, that's what that is. That's in half Florida.
And there's a lot more action that's starting to happen in North Carolina also, so it probably would be 8. So we're growing. We're reaching out further, and more importantly, a lot of folks are coming in. At this annual meeting where we are, Vernon, you'll probably see representation from a lot more than that. And so just the challenge for us is trying to figure out how do we spread ourselves that thin where we can do the work. And so we depend a lot on our board members, our membership, volunteers, our partners, these networks to get this work done, and trying to figure out how do we coordinate that work so it's effective is one of our biggest challenges.
So how do you measure how effective you are? Because this economic development, this co-op economic development, land retention advocacy, I guess you could say in advocacy, you could look at what kind of policies and programs you've got created over the years. Land retention, are you helping people to retain their land? Are they still losing it? And then what kind of economic development, what kind of co-op economic development? You have more co-ops being developed, you're getting bigger.
So let me point to a couple of things specifically.
Okay.
So around land retention, the basis of it is about, and unfortunately, it was about starting in a place where we stopped the bleeding. And by that, I mean this. There's some statistics that came from the statistical services, from the census. In 1910, there were roughly about 218,000 black farmers owning about 15 million acres of land.
Before the turn, wait a minute, that's 15 million
acres of land.
Wait, but in 1910,
that was the peak of black land ownership.
Okay, did folks get that by 40 acres in a mule?
I don't think we ever got our 40 acres in a mule.
I know we didn't.
So how
did they get 15 million acres?
Our people were very enterprising. And we have a rich history. We have an infrastructure. We have a basis, a foundation to build upon. But unfortunately, there have been so many things that have come into play that have forced the loss of that. So in 1910, that was the peak. But by 1992, before the turn of the century, there were only 18,000 black farmers, roughly, owning about 2.3 million acres. So you see the decline in the number of farmers, black farmers. You see the decline in land ownership. And that matters. That makes a huge difference because we own less and less of this country. We're less and less involved in the environmental aspects of this country. So things are happening to us and not coming from us more and more. And it matters. And unfortunately, the Federation came into play. And one part of this in terms of land retention was about stemming that tide, stemming that loss. So we got into this when the game was already, we were coming in the fourth quarter and we're losing. And so we're coming into the game and just trying to throw some Hail Mary passes. But to answer your question around this land issue, it's about retaining the land, retaining that land base because it's so important. And so a majority of our work is around that. But there have been some improvements here and there. There have been some folks who have gained some, and there have been some studies. And so we're trying to figure out how do we better study that? How do we better assess the impact? We hope we're starting to get better. When you look at our annual report, you'll see some of the statistics, some of the data. But we're trying to get better at studying that. But it has to be more than us. We partner with the National Ag Statistics Service, a part of the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So we have some surprising partners, some strategic partners, and we work to figure out how do we work through that, how do we measure that impact, and how do we build our work around it.
Okay, so I just want to go back. 1910, there was 280,000 farmers.
About 218,000.
218,000 farmers.
Black farmers.
With 15 million acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lost 200,000 farmers by 1992. It's down to 18,000. From 218 to 18,
yep.
Black farmers, from 15 million acres of land to 2.3 million acres of land. So there was a huge need for the Federation because it would be interesting, we can't figure this out, but if there was no Federation and with this land retention, maybe we'd only have 0.3 million acres of land if you guys weren't around.
Yeah, or maybe none. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
And that's the point. And it was so alarming that there was a Civil Rights Commission that was created. And that Civil Rights Commission, the report on it came out and said that if the trend continued the way it was, by the turn of the century, by the year 2000, there would be no black farmers. That's what the report said.
Okay. I hadn't read the report, but that's what I was thinking, the way we were losing. So, okay. Monica Rain from your office was on the show once, and we got more calls that day because she was talking about the different ways that folks was taking the land, and it was literally taking,
mm-hmm.
okay, particularly through heirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to get into that today because you only have a few minutes before you have to go to your board meeting. So what kind of co-op development have you guys been doing?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so great question. So I mentioned earlier that our organization, we're an association of black farmers, landowners, and cooperatives. But cooperatives is the core part of what our organization is. The Federation was founded by 22 cooperatives. 22 cooperatives from all around the South came together from Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, all around the South. There were 22 co-ops came together, and they came together to create their own organization, this association, this cooperative of cooperatives, if you will,
okay.
To basically be their tool, to provide economic opportunities. Again, we were created out of the Civil Rights Movement, and at that time, as you know, there was a lot of social unrest. And the cooperatives was the economic side of that. When black folks registered to vote, as an example, they were sharecroppers in most cases. They were kicked off their land. If they worked, they lost their job. So you had to have an economic alternative in those communities. And cooperatives gave them an opportunity to create their own businesses, their own economic base, where they could participate politically, where they could do the advocacy side of things, where they could register to vote. And so that was important. And Vernon, I always say that in order for a community, an organization, or anything to be sustainable, to be successful, it has to have an economic base, a political base, and a code of conduct. And so a cooperative gives you that. It's a base to create resources, a basis to create wealth. Talking about people coming together to form their own business that's jointly owned and controlled, their own business, their own economic base. So it has to have that to generate resources. You got to have resources. It gives the political base because people in these cooperatives, in these organizations, in these businesses, they learn to conduct business and they learn leadership development skills on their own. They teach themselves that in the process of organizing or sustaining that business. They then go on, and there's been many cases. They go on to run for public offices. They go on to become over school boards, various things in their own communities, and that's been the history of it. So they then get that political experience and breath, if you will. And then when you talk about code of conduct, it doesn't matter if we have an economic base or a political base, if we don't have any rules to govern ourselves, if we don't understand the importance of utilizing our own economic basis, if we don't understand the importance of being politically active, if we don't understand those things, it doesn't matter because we lose them. And the church at many times was that. They gave us some kind of code of conduct, even if it was just spiritual. But they gave us that, and the co-ops build onto that. They give you those bylaws and tell you, here's how you operate. We then start learning whether it's Robert's Rules of Order of how to conduct a business or how important the bylaws are, because it gives us that code. Now, here's how we behave. Here's how we act. Here's how we work together. Here's how we act cooperatively. It gives you those things. Even if you have an economic base, if you all have a political base and you all have self-interest, you go different ways. It doesn't matter. So how do we operate within the confines of that economic base or that political base? So that code of conduct is just important, if not more.
That code of conduct that you're talking about, I went directly to, and I see a lot of bylaws will have the cooperative values and principles that was created in 1844 right outside of England with everyday people sewing in the textile industry. So you got the folks at the lower end. They were working poor again. They created these values. I like the values of honesty, mm-hmm. openness, social responsibility, and caring for each other. Those codes and then those seven principles. And you'll see those embedded in a lot of the bylaws of co-ops to give you that. I never thought about it. Economic base, political base, and code of conduct. Neat. Thank mm-hmm. you, bro. Mm-hmm.
So you're welcome.
how has it been for you working for the Federation?
It's been a whole lot of things. It started out as just a blessing. I never knew anything like the Federation existed. I've been with the Federation now 21 years, and I say I stumbled upon it. And I stumbled upon it because of other folks, other mentors who worked with me years when I didn't know anything, and I know a little bit more now. But I stumbled upon it, and it was a blessing. It was a surprise to see black people, communities, owning their own infrastructure. I stumbled upon it in Epps, Alabama. I walked on the training center of the Federation. The Federation, this organization, owns over 1,200 acres of land, and a training center sits on one track of that 1,200 acres. And I was at the training center, and I was there during a community event that was being held at the Federation, facilitated by the Federation. And I looked around, and I was amazed. And I was even more amazed when I learned that the folks who were there, who were putting it on, who were participating in it, owned it. And I haven't left. And I haven't left. So it's been a lot of things. It's been amazing. It's been a blessing. It's been a challenge. But when you love things, the challenges are worthwhile. You sometimes wake up in the morning looking for the next challenge. That's right. And that's where I find myself a lot of times with the Federation. But, hey, it keeps me moving. It keeps me in check. It keeps me humble. And it gives me the opportunity to serve. And that's what my grandmother and my mother always told me, that if you're not serving, you're not doing anything.
All right, brother, caring for one another. So I'm looking at your financial statement. You have assets and you have liabilities. And it looks like you got more assets than liabilities.
And my job is to make sure we always have that.
And assets are what you own, and liabilities is what you owe. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, too many people in America owe more than they own. Mm-hmm. And they call that a negative net worth. And some people think if you don't have any net worth financially, you're not worth anything. Mm-hmm. And they treat you that way.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's what too many politicians and folks in power would treat everyday people, like they are a problem and not that poverty is a problem. So it's like, how do you help those everyday people in the Federation get a net worth, a positive net worth? Mm-hmm.
And so, and let me make one very important distinction, and it's really not about me helping them. It's about what the Federation is about, a group of people helping themselves. And they've hired me to carry out those wishes. So my job is to go out and find out how to do the things they want to do. My job is to help find the resources to do the things they want to do. So, and the Federation is no different than many people in this country and in this world. They know how to help themselves. They just need the resources to do so. They need some assistance to do so. They need some technical advice or knowledge to do so. And so, and unfortunately, they don't usually have the resources to hire those kind of folks. There's no different than everybody else in this world that do. They hire their own lawyers. They hire accountants. They hire expertise. They hire judges. They hire politicians. And so you know, how do we group our resources to do the same? And that's what the question is, and that's what the Federation is. And sometimes I wake up and realize the Federation is bigger than I even know. And it's a blessing learning more and more about it every day and being a part of it.
So when you talked about self-help, people helping themselves, that took me to the co-op value. That's the first one they talked about, based on the values of self-help, people helping themselves, self-responsibility, democracy, equality, equity, and solidarity are the main principles of a cooperative. I guess then the reason for this program, the reason the National Co-op Bank is sponsoring this program, is to get people, more people, to know about co-ops. That maybe if they know about co-ops, they can find folks like you guys in the Federation to get that technical help, or other organizations like Cooperative Development Foundation, CDF, to get funding to start your own food co-op or whatever other kind of co-op you may want to do. Okay, so how do we get people to know about the Federation? How do you get that? And I'll go all the way back. You said that you have staff in 6 of those states? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what do they do?
So we have in 6 states, we have facilities. We have infrastructure. And so on. The Federation, fortunately, owns all of its offices. It owns its training center. I work out of what we call the administrative office in Atlanta, in East Point, a part of Atlanta. There we have roughly 10 staff, and we do the administrative side of the organization. That's where our director of finance, that's where you mentioned Monica Range earlier, that's where our director of land retention and advocacy is, that's where our director of co-op development is, that's where our director of communications is. That's where we have some amazing administrative staff who do the administrative work of the organization. But we also have a training center that sits on 1,200 acres, and that's in Epps, Alabama. And what we like to say is the center of everywhere, the center of the world.
Epps.
And John Zippert, our one longtime staff member, one of my mentors, talks about Epps being the center of the universe. But Epps is a small place about 50 miles west of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, about 50 miles east of Meridian, Mississippi. And it's the biggest employer in Epps. We have about 10 staff usually there at Epps and a lot of support staff. Again, that's where we have the grounds, the training center. We have field offices in Mississippi. We have field offices in Georgia, in Louisiana, South Carolina. So there's some field offices where we have what we call outreach specialists, led and headed by what we call a state coordinator in each state, and then some administrative staff, and more importantly, outreach specialists, folks who are actually the core of this work, the ones who are out there interacting with our membership, with the community, with black farmers and landowners and cooperatives every single day. And our job in the administrative office is to provide the administrative support for that. Our job at our training center is to provide a mechanism for training based on the needs that they see out in the field. So all of it work together, centered around administrative folks, outreach staff, and coordinators.
Sound like you got a lot of work to do, man.
A whole lot.
Do you like what you do?
I love what I do. I can see myself doing anything else.
All right, baby. What do you have plans? I know Epps, I'm going to go down there tomorrow and maybe Saturday. So you have training down there. You have a dinner tonight. Mm-hmm. And you're honoring Ralph Page?
Tonight. Yes, sir. So thanks for asking. So we're celebrating our 51st anniversary. Last year was a milestone for us, and we did it big.
Okay.
So we're celebrating our 51st anniversary. We have our annual meeting every year. The business meets is the third Saturday of August. So that's our fiscal year. But the organization meets, the whole organization meets every year in August. Third week, basically, around the third Saturday. So tonight, Thursday, we'll start off with board meetings where business of the organization is conducted on the board level. We have what we call our Estelle Witherspoon Lifetime Achievement Award Banquet, where we honor somebody who's lived a lifelong life of service, if you will. And this year we're honoring one of our own, our former executive director, my predecessor, my mentor, my friend, Ralph Page. Ralph Page served the organization for 46 years. He served as the executive director for 30 of those 46 years. He was the second executive director of the organization. His predecessor was Charles Prejean. And I'm the third full-time executive director for the organization.
So in the 51 years, you've had three executive directors.
And there's been a couple of folks who played some huge roles in terms of filling the void in the gaps, doing things. But three executive directors for the most part. And Ralph Page was the second. He passed a couple of weeks or so ago. We're honoring him posthumously with the Estelle Witherspoon Lifetime Achievement Award. That's today, Thursday. So we have many of our partners, many of our supporters here. This is it's a celebration for us, a celebration of the recipient, and this year being Ralph Page. But it's also a time where our partners get a chance to come together and see the breadth of the organization, hear about the breadth of the organization. And it's a fundraiser for us as well. Then on Friday and Saturday, we go down to the mothership. We go down to Epps, Alabama, to our training center, which is about 100 miles west of here, of Birmingham. And we start out Friday with some conversations with USDA. We usually have a USDA panel that consists of every agency within USDA. And they talk about their programs, about their agencies, about their work. And more importantly, they interact directly with the membership, with the farmers, with the landowners from all around the South, and many other partners. And there's conversations, there's tough questions, there's honest answers, there's conflict, there's rejoicing, and we finish the night with a fish fry. So we know that we're all still friends. We just got to figure out how do we do this work together, because at the end of the day, what's at stake is this country. And we collectively and especially we black people, we have to play a role in the progress of this country as well when we start talking about the natural resources, the air, the water, and the soil. So we learn that, we understand that, and we understand what our role is and that we are part of this. And when we understand that, when everybody understands that, then we all get into the fight to make sure we save that black-owned land, to make sure we stop that decline, because it's important. We got to have a stake in this country, and we have a role to play. But we end Saturday with a business meeting, with our annual meeting with the membership, with what we call state caucuses. It's the crux of this organization, where each state cuddles up in their own corner, and they talk about what this organization needs to do for them, what it needs to continue to do, what it needs to change, or whatever. They talk about the problems, and our job as a staff to listen. And we find out, and we take that, and those are our marching orders for the next year. And we're in, and I give my message as the executive director to the membership. But that's our weekend. It's our 51st anniversary.
Washington, D.C.'s News Talk, 1450 AM, WOLA 95.9.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Vernon Oakes. The program is Everything Cooperative. I am in Birmingham, Alabama. We just interviewed Mr. Cornelius Blanding. He had to go to a board meeting at 10 o'clock, so he had to leave us. And we have Mr. Bruce Harold, who is the outreach specialist for Louisiana. But the National Co-op Bank is sponsoring this program to give everybody out there information about co-ops. NCB's mission is to support and be an advocate for America's cooperatives and their members, especially in low-income communities, by providing innovative financial and related services. And Mr. Cornelius Blanding told us that the Federation of Southern Co-ops, who's having their annual meeting this weekend, they do cooperative economic development, land retention, and advocacy work. And they have state representatives, state offices in six states. And Mr. Bruce Harold is the outreach specialist for Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What does an outreach specialist do?
Okay. We work with small and minority farmers in rural areas. We also work with individuals in the urban communities also, with urban gardens and with urban agriculture.
So you try to get some good food in the city, huh?
Yes.
And that's all I think of Louisiana is New Orleans and their food. Food and music. So, Bruce, how long have you been with the Federation?
Approximately 7 to 8 years.
Okay. So how did you get to the Federation?
I met Mr. Blanding about 7, 8 years ago. He was working on a pilot program with cooperatives, you know, in Louisiana. And he asked me, would I be interested in joining the Federation? And I did my some homework about the Federation, and I joined.
And what was your background? Were you a farmer, or what did you do?
Yes, I was a farmer, and I have a degree in agriculture. So I've been in agriculture my entire life.
You have a degree in agriculture. From what college?
Okay, now it's ULL. When I got my degree, it was the University of Southwestern Louisiana, USL. Mm-hmm. Now it's ULL. University of Louisiana in Lafayette.
University of Louisiana in Lafayette. Okay, in
yes.
Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in agriculture. What do you guys learn? How to milk a cow?
No, I never milked a cow.
Okay.
I'm a fourth generation farmer. My dad, we raise livestock, like hogs, you know, cows. And we raise grain, such as wheat, soybeans, corn.
Okay. In Louisiana?
Yes, in Louisiana. Yeah, in central Louisiana. I grew up in a small town called Simsport, Louisiana. And this is where we form currently today.
And it's called, what's the name of the city?
Simsport, Louisiana.
Simsport. Is it a port?
It's on the Atchafalaya River. Simsport.
Okay. What was it like growing up on a farm in Simsport, Louisiana?
It was hard work, but it made me a man. It made me who I am today. You know, it was long hours. We didn't have tractors, you know, with air conditioning. When we grew up, you know, we ate dirt, you know, most of the day, you know, driving the tractor. But it made me a man. It really did.
So Simsport, is that S-I-M?
M-E-S-P-O-R-T.
One word or two?
One word.
Oh, I got it. Simsport, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't know what it would be like growing up on a farm, and what I think of it with what I've heard. We farmed about an acre of land. We grew stuff about an acre of land, that, you know, corn and green beans and tomatoes and cabbage and potatoes. And the only part I liked was harvesting. I didn't like that as much as eating, but I had to harvest in order to eat. So, but how many acres did you all have?
Back then, between 150 to 200 acres when I was growing up. We increased to 800 acres at one time, and we lost property. Landowners gave the property to other farmers. But now I'm farming approximately about 200 acres now. We are.
So you are farming now?
Yes, sir.
So you work with the Federation?
Mm-hmm. I work with the Federation on a part-time basis in Louisiana. And my sons, we form together.
How many sons?
I have two boys, two sons.
Okay. You're making them a man, too.
Yes, sir. They're both in agriculture. My youngest son, he's a senior at the University of Arkansas. He's majoring in agribusiness. When he graduates, you know, he plans on, you know, working, in the for a governmental agency or in the agricultural field for 3 or 4 years. Then he plans on coming back and working for the family business.
So that's what I was thinking, that agriculture was the business side of it. But I guess it's the cropping. How do you learning how to get the best out of the soil, how to get the best crop, or how to make the soil where it won't get to where it was like during the depression of a dust bowl, but how you manage the soil, the land, and get the most utility out of it, both in terms of farming animals. And my farming skill set was very small, and I keep thinking about, because I live in D.C., of urban farming, which you were talking about in the cities, but getting some organic farming again, because I like vegetables more than anything else. So I've been thinking about doing that, but I cannot even imagine the hard work of farming. That's like, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night or something.
Yes, it's long hours, especially like right now when it's, you know, so hot. We get up, and like you say, 5 o'clock in the morning, and you work until, you know, noon. It gets too hot, and we let the workers, you know, take a break. Yes, sir. Now, you know, we also raise fresh vegetables. My wife and I, Rena Harrell, we started raising fresh vegetables a few years ago on our own, on a small scale. We wanted to do it the old-fashioned way, and we wanted to get our hands on. So we did all the labor and all. We realized if you work in that field and you harvest your crops, you're too tired to go and sell them.
Okay.
So, you know, we had to, you know, hire individuals to help us. It's a must. You can't do it all.
So how do you sell them?
We sell them to markets. Being part of the Federation, we sell some of our vegetables to another cooperative in Mississippi, Indian Springs. We have a large church base. We sell a lot of our vegetables, you know, locally and to church members.
I was wondering, through the Federation, the sixth co-op principle is cooperation among co-ops. And with the Federation having so many different cooperatives as members, that the farmers could then sell to food co-ops or other businesses, but I was mainly thinking of food co-ops. In some churches, I know in our church in D.C., we would pool our monies and then buy. And so we get a lot more when we buy in bulk like that and then fresh foods. So is that the kind of things you're doing at churches around there?
No. Well, we just sell to individuals in a church.
Okay.
Yes, sir. You know, and that program that you're talking about, we've heard of it where the churches will buy, let's say, 100 boxes of vegetables.
Right.
And, you know, the members just...
And they separate them.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Do you know with that, I found out we were getting so much food we couldn't consume it all. It was family of four. We couldn't consume it. So I ended up giving it to my sisters and stuff. And so it got to be, and it was interesting. That was probably the best buy in terms of the city of getting good quality food and the volume of it.
Yes.
So, okay. So you do this working with Indian Springs in Mississippi.
Yes, sir. That's right. We sell them like sweet potatoes. And right now we're selling okra and purple herb peas. We buy all of our watermelons from them each year. From their members, they've got the sweetest watermelons. But a shout out to them. But they've got the sweetest watermelons around.
Well, this is Indian Springs.
Yes.
So you sell to them and buy from them.
That's correct. We work together. That's correct.
So do you just buy watermelon for you or for the community?
Well, for the community, we buy them and you know sell them. Put a markup on them and sell them to individuals.
Okay. Now you make me want some watermelon here. Okay. I'm about to take some back to our engineer, Stanley. Sounds like he wants some watermelon, too. Okay.
And I'm from Evolves Parish. Okay. Simsport is in Evolves Parish in Louisiana. And we grow the sweetest sweet potatoes in the country. So you want the best sweet potatoes in Louisiana, to Evolves Parish. They may sell them and they may grow them in other areas, but Evolves Parish has the sweetest sweet potatoes.
You have any sense, and I'm being a little scientific, but why? What is it about the soil?
The soil. Yes, it's the soil that it grows in. I don't know.
Okay.
They're sweet.
So I drove down here because I stopped in North Carolina. And so I'm in Birmingham and I'm going to Epps, but you're making me want to go on to Indian Springs and Mississippi and then come on down there and get me some sweet potato.
That's right.
Because I found I like just baking a sweet potato and then just cutting and putting some butter on it. I don't need nothing else. And if it's sweet like you're talking about, that's...
Oh, yes. I don't they are. That. And when you bake them, the juice or the syrup it comes right out while you're baking them. So make sure you put them on a pan.
Yeah.
It'll mess your oven up.
Okay. All right. So we've gone from economic empowerment, co-op economic empowerment, having a political base and a code of conduct to how we going to cook our sweet potatoes. Okay. So we're going to take a break in a minute, and then I want to come back and talk to you specifically more about what you all do in the office there,
okay
in Louisiana to help out the farmers and growing the vegetables in the city and what you might do to help to create co-ops.
Okay.
But we'll be right back. Please don't touch that dial.
Washington, D.C.'s News Talk, 1450 AM WOS and 95.9 FM.
Information is power, and this is Vernon Oaks. We're bringing you information about this co-op economic development, the different ways that cooperatives can help a community, an individual, a family, to get economic power. Matter of fact, Dame Pauline Green said she was the president of the International Cooperative Alliance, and she said that co-ops help people to come out of poverty with dignity. And I really have liked that, with the dignity, not only coming out of poverty, but learning about how you manage a business and how you manage relationships. And then this learning process is where people get that dignity. And this is why WOL makes a great, great partner, because they know that information is power. But what I've also know and have learned is that information by itself doesn't do it. What does it is using that information. Information becomes power when you use it. If you don't use it, there is no power. Like having a gallon of gasoline in a corner. It's of no value whatsoever. It's not until you put a spark to it that it becomes powerful. So we're giving you information. We're hoping you're going to use it. And I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, at the Federation of Southern Co-ops annual meeting. Mr. Cornelius Blandy was on the first half an hour, who is the executive director of the coalition, and Mr. Bruce Harold is the outreach specialist part-time in the Federation of Southern Co-ops, and he runs the Louisiana office, and he's an outreach specialist. So he said he's been doing that for a few years now. He's been a farmer, has a degree in agriculture, has two boys who's in farming, following their dad's footprint. He's a fourth-generation farmer. So they've been doing this thing for a minute in Louisiana, in the South, and they've been through a lot. He didn't have to tell me this. I already know it. He's a black man in America for four generations, so they've been through a bunch in Louisiana and the South. But it sounds like they're doing well. They manage as much as 800 acres, raising hogs and cattle and grain. So, Mr. Hurl, would you tell me and the folks that are listening some examples of the farmers that you're helping and what you do at the Federation to help these farmers?
Okay, yes. In the past year and a half, I held workshops in the urban areas of Louisiana, in New Orleans and Baton Rouge. It was a program to let the individuals who had a desire or a want to farm, to tell them about the urban agriculture program initiative that they had at USDA Rural Development. They could qualify for a high tunnel, which it's similar to a greenhouse. But in a greenhouse, you grow your plants and you raise your plants in pots, you know, on tables and what have you. But in the high tunnel, it's a covering, but you're forming the soil. You're growing the plants in the soil.
Okay.
And, you know, an individual, they can qualify to up to, it was like $20,000. To get a high tunnel. You didn't have to own the property. You just have to have a lease. I think it was like at least 3 to 5 years. And you could qualify, you know, for a high tunnel through, you know, USDA, Rural Development, NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service. They had an urban ag initiative.
Is that still going on? Because that sounds like people like me in D.C. could maybe do that too. Is that, you know?
It could be. I don't know if it's in D.C., but yes, you can reach out to your local NRCS office, and they can let you know if that particular program is offered. Now, with NRCS, different states have different needs. You know, one program may be offered in one state, where it's not offered in another one.
Okay.
You know, okay. It's based upon need. But this high tunnel program, it's for urban agriculture.
So high tunnel, do you know how big this, you say it's not like a greenhouse, because a greenhouse, you're going to grow it on tables, you're going to grow whatever, and then in pots.
Well, yes, it's like a greenhouse, but instead of growing on the tables, you know, in pots, you're raising your plants or your trees or shrubs or whatever in the soil. What it does is it extends the growing season. Let's say you're raising tomatoes. Tomatoes, you may, normally you start, but let's say in Louisiana, you start raising your tomatoes. You plant them outside, say in March or April. Well, the high turnip program, you can start in January because you're covering the area, and you're manipulating the temperature.
Okay. I'd imagine it would still be hard in D.C. since January and February can be very cold, snow and cold. But in Louisiana, I could possibly see it. You still have colder weather, but not the snow. You don't get the snow down there. Rarely.
Rarely, yes.
Yeah, ours is regularly. So it extends the growing season. But how big is this tent, if you will? I'm going to call it that. That's what I can visualize. How big is it?
Well, you can get them different sizes. It all depends on your need. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have, let's say, half an acre, you may get it, let's say, 50 by 100. You know, or, you know, it all depends on your need.
Okay.
And what you qualify for and the amount that you qualify for. You just want to make sure you can get a small tractor, inside of the high tunnel so you can work the soil.
I thought you used a pick and a shovel. That's what we used to use. No, to turn the soil was interesting. We had a horse. One of our neighbors had the horse with the
plow.
With the plow.
Yes. Okay.
And he would turn the soil, mm-hmm. put it down, and make the rows. And then we would come. But we had weed it with a pick.
Okay.
That's going back a little bit. All right. I wouldn't want to do that today. But 50 by 100.
That's just an example.
Yeah.
It could be 100 by, 200 or 150 by 300. You know, it's different sizes. It all depends on your need and what you're planning on doing.
Yeah, I was thinking about what the backyards in the city might be. And it could be 50 by 100.
Okay.
Could be.
Another thing before... you'd have to see if you have any zoning ordinances in your city, because they may not allow an individual to have a high tunnel.
Got it. I'm writing this down because I'm quite interested in it. I've been interested in growing. Now, the people that do this, I would imagine, particularly if it's 100 by 300, they are going to sell this product. They can't use all of that for a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you help them, and how do you market that too, or do they do that on their own?
Well, they do it on their own. Now, that's where cooperative development comes in. I try to work with a group, or I try to put on a workshop. I tell the farmers or the individuals who are at the workshop, if they can start a cooperative, get at least 7 to 10 farmers who want to start farming, they can start a cooperative. Okay, let's say that they all qualify for a high tunnel. Let's say it's 10 individuals. They all get a high tunnel, okay? Instead of each one of them buying a small tractor, well, if they're part of the cooperative, they can buy one tractor and they can share the tractor.
Got it.
Or the equipment. You know, that's going to help them on their cost. They can buy seed in bulk, which would help with their cost also.
Okay. So I just got a note from our producer, Pat Thornton, that you need to talk up a little bit. I turned you up a little bit.
Okay.
We were both low. So if you get 5, 6, 7 people that want to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a young lady in D.C. that's using part of the land of one of the colleges, universities up there. And she's created a farm. And then she's packaging it and selling it to people. And they've created a co-op where the individuals that buy it belong to the co-op. And they're similar to the church thing I was telling you about.
Yes.
So that every week they get bags of vegetables depending on whatever she's harvesting. And that seems to be going quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's different ways of doing it.
That's right. Okay. Let's say, this cooperative of these, 10 farmers. They can get together. They can market their products initially as naturally raised. They can't say that it's organic because you have to have that certification.
Right.
But they can get more for their products. They said it's naturally raised. and, you know, using no chemicals.
Right.
Okay, so they can get a better price for their products.
So do you like what you're doing? And you said this farming was hard work. It made you a man. Do you like farming? Do you like this work with the cooperative, the Federation of Southern Corps?
No, sir, I don't. I love it.
You don't like it. You love it. Okay.
Yes, sir. Okay. And, you know, again, my boys, they're following my footsteps. They're going to be, they want to farm, and they want to do what we do, what I do. Helping other farmers and young men in agriculture.
And so you followed your dad followed his dad followed his dad.
Yes, sir.
Four generations.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening, and please have a wonderful, wonderful cooperative week. We'll see you next Thursday.
Washington, D.C.'s News Talk, 1450 AM WOS and 95.5.